KUT's easy-to-use archives. Instructions are on the page. 2 months' worth of archives are stored in mono, and half a month's worth in stereo.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal.
If you're having trouble, please email sys@ckut.ca. That's sys@ckut.ca. Oh,
yeah! I want to be a motivator.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Amanda, your weekly bilingual news show with the news and analysis from the continent of Africa, hopefully stuff that you won't find much else anywhere else. And we're here at CQT 90.3 every week on a Wednesday evening. So here we go. Gwen, what's on the lineup today?
Well, really big and important news out of Burkina Faso a few weeks ago, and that is that the former president of Burkina Faso, Blaise Compaoré, who is widely believed to have played a direct hand in the assassination of the great African hero Thomas Sankara, has been charged with his murder, which, you know, a lot of people said would never, ever happen. Well, after more than two decades of wending through the courts and trying various international bodies and then local Burkinabe legal entities and whatever, well, he, along with 13 others, have been charged. So I had an opportunity to talk to Annette Lowe of the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa, GRILA, who have played an integral role in the legal process, in kicking it off, in supporting the family in their efforts to end this terrible story of impunity. And so here we are. It's a major, major development. For those of our listeners who are not familiar with Thomas Sankara, stay tuned. It's all going to be laid out for you in this show.
Yes, and we'll start with that interview because it's such a significant event. But I'll follow up with three or four pieces of music and a lovely 12-minute introduction to who Thomas Sankara is by Milton Alimadi. So stay tuned to Amanda.
Cela dans famille, mais pas dans le sang. en vengeance. L'Afrique est tombée dans la déchéance. Vouloir venger Sankara, c'est perpétuer la bêtise. La bêtise politique, antidémocratique. Soif de pouvoir, c'est la boulimie du pouvoir, c'est la gourmandise du pouvoir.
Welcome back to Amandla here on CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca around the world. And for the best of Amandla, please do check out our blog, not our blog, our blog, which is at amandla.ca. So as I said in the introduction, I had a wonderful opportunity to talk to Ahmed Lowe. He is a long-standing friend of Amandla, used to run the sister show in Toronto, the Amandla Out of Toronto. Has contributed many, many times to our Amandla, and for me personally is a little bit of a compass. When there are complex issues that need to be taken apart on the continent, Ahmed Lowe is definitely one of my go-to guys. And most importantly for tonight's show, as a member of GRILA, Ahmed has really devoted a lot of time over two decades plus to break the cycle of impunity in Burkina Faso. Back in 1987, the revolutionary leader of Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara, was assassinated. It became very clear almost right from the outset that he had been assassinated by the man who went on to take power, Blaise Compaoré, and who steadfastly held on to power until 6 years ago when people went into the streets and kicked him out. So anyway, the point is that there's been a long-standing struggle to bring him to justice and to charge him with the murder. And that happened a couple of weeks ago in Burkina Faso. Blaise Compaoré was charged with the murder of Thomas Sankara, along with 13 others. So Ahmed is the perfect person to talk to, having been involved in this struggle right from day one for legal justice. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with Ahmed Lowe. Ahmed Lowe, welcome back to Amandla. It's been a
while.
Thank
you so much. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you. Well, actually to see you for the interview remotely. You're in Toronto right now. I'm in Montreal, just so that our listeners kind of get a lay of the land.
Right.
So listen, there's been quite the development in the legal fight to charge those responsible for the assassination of Thomas Sankara in 1987. Can you just bring us up to date on the latest legal developments?
Yes, but maybe explain a little bit who Thomas Sankara was first, because some people may not know.
Yes.
Thomas Sankara was the president of Burkina Faso, which is a country in West Africa. He was a president. He came to power in 1984 at the age of 36. And then they embarked on a very deep program of transformation in the country, very active on all fronts, transforming a lot of stuff. But after 4 years of a radical transformation, of a revolutionary process, unfortunately, the process has been put to an end. After that, he's a close ally who a lot of people believed he was behind this assassination was in power. He took over when Sankara was assassinated. And then he was there until 2015 when he was removed by a popular insurrection that took place in the country.
You're talking about specifically about Blaise Compaoré.
Blaise Compaoré, to name it. Now, in 1997, the family of Thomas Sankara have introduced a complaint within the judicial system in Burkina Faso to try to identify who were those people who were involved in the assassination of Sankara and 12 other of his comrades at the time. So this case has been dragging on literally from 1997 up to now. What happened after the removal of Blaise Compaoré is that the judicial system was at least able now to proceed with the case, because before it was kind of blocked by the president. And what we had last year was that after months and years of investigation, the judicial system came to the conclusion that there was enough information to proceed with a trial. And then this year, last April, they decided that there was enough evidence to proceed with a trial. Unfortunately, by the time this decision came through, in 2015, when Blaise Compaoré was removed from power, he fled the country and is now living in the neighboring country of Ivory Coast, where he acquired a second nationality. So he's a citizen from Ivory Coast. And because of the rule and the law from that country, he cannot be extradited.
Yeah.
So he's living in Ivory Coast. But despite that, the judges have decided to proceed with the case. And then as of last month, we know that now we're going to go to trial. And then this is going to be a very important day for a lot of people who've been waiting for this outcome, because for what Thomas Sankara stood for and his comrades, and also the whole idea of the struggle against impunity, which is where we have leaders who came to power trying to make some changes and then they end up being assassinated. We can name Thomas Sankara, we can name Patrice Lumumba in Congo, Amilcar Cabral in Guinea-Bissau. So a lot of leaders, Chris Hani from South Africa, even though he didn't come to power, but a lot of people who've been very enthusiastic or had a vision of moving the African countries away from their new colonial path. Lots of them have been murdered and assassinated with the complicity of international forces that act in conjunction with some internal forces. So that's why it is important at this point in time to proceed with this case, so the light might come out, so we know who the actors were internally, and also potentially the connection at the international level, because we believe that there is an international connection to this. Mm-hmm. And then that may mark the beginning of an end of this cycle of impunity that has been happening consistently for the last 50 or 60 years. Mm-hmm. In Africa.
Okay, so you've moved through a lot of history and a lot of developments very succinctly. I almost feel like we could just end the interview now, but I would like to kind of fill in some of the details. So, you know what, tantalizingly, you brought up right at the end international complicity. So maybe why don't we start there? I know that France, a couple of years ago, actually agreed declassify government documents concerning Sankara's killing. So I guess that was back in 2017 that happened. And if I understand correctly, that has happened to a degree, because I think some of these documents perhaps are going to be used in court. I'm not sure, but could you talk a little bit about what you know about the declassification, and also France? Why would France have agreed to do that, given its deep complicity with the Compaoré regime?
There's a couple of things. Yes, the French president, the current president Macron, went to visit in Burkina Faso, and during his speech, because some questions were asked, he said that France would declassify some of the archives that are relevant to the time when Sankara was murdered, because everybody have a suspicion that France was deeply involved. So far there have been a set of three batch of documents that have been released and then transmitted to the judicial system in Burkina Faso. But I'm kind of tend to think that not everything has been released, because some of the archives from the former president and the former prime minister haven't been given. And then even for documents that have been released to Burkina Faso, you know how what happened when they declassify some documents, they kind of put some blanketing to hide some information. So it's better than nothing, but we suspect that some of the very fundamental critical documents from the state or from the archive, from the personal archive from the former president, François Mitterrand, or for the former prime minister, may contain more useful information. But even though, no matter what, the case have to proceed with whatever we have and with the local information, because there are a lot of survivors of what happened. And then we know that if we go through the process, some information might emerge in the connection between France and Blaise Compaoré and Charles Taylor, who was the president of Liberia and who was a very close friend of Blaise Compaoré. Together, they kind of put in flame the region, the whole region, with the war that took place in Sierra Leone in Liberia. And then a lot of people suspect that some of the elements from Charles Taylor, from Liberia, were also involved in the assassination of Sankara and his comrades. So we are hoping that through the process of the trial, more information will emerge, and then potentially use. We don't know what is the content of those archives that were released by France, but we'll take whatever is there when we have access to it.
Yeah. Okay. Also, in your succinct summary of the whole thing, it almost seems too easy that we've arrived today at this trial, when in fact this has been an extremely long and arduous task to try to bring those who are responsible to account. And you, in your typical modesty, have failed to mention the role that your organization, the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa, has played in this very, very momentous and difficult process. So, you know, without getting into too much detail, this process could have been derailed any number of times over the last two decades, and there were certainly interests, including Blaise Compaoré, who was in power when this whole process started, very doggedly tried to block it at every turn. So can you kind of fill some of that in? Because it's an important story, and it's dramatic and difficult and a real struggle, and it will help our listeners understand why the fact that now charges have actually been laid against Compaoré and 13 others is such a huge victory and accomplishment.
It is. And as you mentioned, GRILA, which is the organization I belong to, have been active and then spearheading this whole campaign since 1997. But also across the world, you have a lot of other actors who are very involved and then campaigning on their side in different countries in Africa. Here also, a lot of organizations or individuals who are sensitive to the question of what's happening in Africa have been involved. That's now what happened, as you rightly so mentioned. As long as Blaise Compaoré, the president who everybody suspects that he was behind the assassination of Thomas Sankara, was in power, everything was controlled, the judicial system was not free, and then nothing happened from 1997 almost until 2015. What has made a change is that 2015, when he was trying to gain another term for his presidency, that's what triggered a popular revolt in the country, with the youth playing a very important role in it, that toppled his government, and then he ran away, and then his regime fell within a couple of days of mobilization. So that's have changed the whole dynamic inside the country, and that have also allowed the transition government and the subsequent government that came to place to release a little bit the hands that was put on top of this process, and the judicial system had resumed since then, and that's why today we have this kind of small opening, even though it's still just at the beginning, but at least we have an opening in looking back into the case and then coming to the conclusion that there's enough evidence to proceed with a real trial. And then some of the people have been arrested already. Compaoré, who lives in Ivory Coast, there is an international warrant for him to be extradited, even though we doubt that it's going to happen, because he's been protected by the president of Burkina Faso, of Ivory Coast, who is the main ally of the French system, France-Afrique system in West Africa. But no matter what, whether he's there or not, it is important that he is trialed, and then that people know who are the actors, at least for history, for people to know, and then so that the people who lost their family members can gain back the bodies and then proceed with a regular burial, because all the bodies were exhumed for the to be able to do some DNA testing, yeah, to identify the bodies, this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Something that Compaoré fought so hard all those years, because one of the primary demands was for that to happen, and he while he was in power, of course, blocked that at every turn.
Right, right. He got everything locked out. And that's why we have to give a big recognition to the role played by the popular movement in the country, even though some organizations like ours were kind of working on this. But the, what made the big difference is was really the removal of Compaoré internally that created a new dynamic that made possible what is happening today.
Yeah, and that was another spectacular moment in 2015 when, you know, popular protests out in the street actually routed him from power and chased him out of the country, something that a lot of people would have thought could never have been possible. He was such a strong man and so repressive, and it was really quite the development. So I'm wondering now, when we look 6 years later, to what degree is that popular mobilization still there? And I guess more specifically to this story, what was the popular response to the announcement that Compaoré has been charged with murder and obstruction and all of these things?
I think it was very well received by internally in the country, by the majority of the population, but also in Africa, in the wider world, all those people who are very interested into the experiment. Because the, what happened in Burkina Faso when Sankara was in power was really an original experiment in terms of decolonization. That was really the one of the first attempts in the post-independence movement to go deeper into a process of radical transformation. And then because of that, there was a lot of sympathy internationally for people who are interested to look into this experiment to see what would happen. So globally, there was satisfaction at this stage, at this step of the process. But as I mentioned, this is one step positive in a long process. And then let's see what's going to happen. Because last week, some weird information emerged that one of the ministers of the government went to Burkina, to Ivory Coast, to meet with Blaise Compaoré. And that minister is the reconciliation minister. They have nominated a special minister for national reconciliation after the last election of last year. So that minister went and met with Blaise Compaoré. And then what we are saying is that the fact to declare national reconciliation is a political action that a state can take, but in no way can that overshadow the process, the judicial process that have to clarify the condition around which people have been murdered, and then what explain what happened. Mm-hmm. And then the family has been insisting that for in any case, the process have to, the trial have to proceed, and then we need to have the truth. And then national reconciliation cannot blur or hide or minimize this process that have to continue until the proof emerge from this process. Mm-hmm. So we are in a monitoring mode right now because there seems to be a lot of maneuvers to try to get Compaoré back and have some type of national reconciliation, which you. Which is, as we say, we acknowledge that that's the will of the state right now, but we insist from our standpoint that that national reconciliation cannot be something that will hide what we've been asking for all these years, which is a truthful and legal process to proceed to identify who are involved in this association.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think it really wouldn't be proper to have this conversation without bringing it back to Thomas Sankara. So while many of our listeners certainly would be aware of why he was such a critical person with, you know, ideas that were so fundamentally important, not only for Burkina Faso, but for the entire continent, and which ultimately led to his assassination, I'd like you to maybe talk briefly about a couple of the programs that Thomas Sankara put in place in the very short 4 years that he was in power that really pointed to transformational change, and explain why all of these years later he's still so inspiring and why this court case indeed is just so incredibly important.
Right. I mean, some of the key elements of his program, as soon as the regime lasted 4 years in total. But if you look at the achievement during those 4 years in terms of education, for example, getting more people involved, being educated in terms of fighting against corruption in the country, and then disconnecting the running of the country from relying on external aid and then relying only on their own forces internally by the mobilizing the population to achieve some great result, like building roads, building houses, building clinics, and getting young people vaccinated, giving more place, more role to women to play in terms of government in all level of societies. There were massive campaign to plant trees across the country, because as I mentioned in my introduction, is a Burkina Faso is in West Africa, and it's a quite dry country, close to the desert. So they have embarked in a lot of campaign to plant trees, and then it was massive. In what they achieved in 4 years was way bigger than what has been achieved from 1960 to 1984.
So
because of that, and then I guess that's what attracted a lot of people to pay attention to what was happening. But unfortunately, at the time when they were in a process of reorganizing the process to take a little bit break of assessment to see where to go next in terms of deepening the process of radical transformation, that's when this military coup occurred and then have put everything in stop. And then after that, everybody knows that things went back to a quote-unquote normal neo-colonial path of development, yeah, is relying on the international community, the IMF, the World Bank, having relationship, and then economy based on export, not promoting the concept of self-reliance in terms of food self-sufficiency or those kind of areas. So because of that, I guess that's why people were very interested to see what was happening in Burkina Faso. And yeah, that was what made it very original compared to the rest of the countries in Africa at that time. Mm-hmm. If I have to compare it to something outside, I would think that it was maybe what happened in Grenada in the Caribbean, because those happened around the same time, between 1979 to 1983. And that will end up will to go and then transform radically the structures of those countries was done around the same time, and with a similar type of leadership, very young, around 35 years old, mm-hmm, with a similar approaches. What is ironic is that both examples were disrupted by the same international forces that I mentioned earlier, because that was to represent a model to disconnect from the neoliberal agenda of development, that is maintaining these countries into a perpetual relationship of domination in relation to the Western country or the imperialist countries, whether it is Europe, in North America, and recent emerging forces coming like Russia, China, Turkey, Morocco even. So that was an example that we need to look into, so that at least we can promote a different way of running the countries. And in a few weeks, we're going to organize the African Liberation Day in May 25th. And that's going to be the opportunity for us to revisit all these experiences, because what the COVID pandemic have revealed again is that some of the key areas of sovereignty that were at the core of the struggle for national independence have been eroded in the early 90s with the neoliberal agenda of the World Bank and the IMF. And what we have seen with the pandemic is that there are key areas of sovereignty that need to be recaptured, or we need to refocus in terms of sovereignty in the medical field, in the health sector, in the food production, sovereignty to control the natural resources that should be the main source of financing our development. So yeah, all those elements that are critical and that have been shown more clearly today by the pandemic crisis, that these are still very relevant issues that we need to focus again to try to regain control of our sovereignty, because after all, that was part of the objective of the National Liberation Movement or the Independence Movement, to regain control of our destiny, to decide where we want to go, how we want to go about it, and with who we want to go about it, which direction, and those goes by, and then it's required to regain this segment of sovereignty, as I mentioned. We have all seen what's happening recently with the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, with vaccine nationalism between countries fighting, and or some countries using vaccine as a tool for their own diplomatic agenda. That reveals that the countries from the global south and Africa in general have to put a very great interest in terms of building scientific centers of excellence in terms of health, of pharmacy, so at least we can develop our own independent system to take care of the population when this crisis occurs, instead of relying on so-called international community who, when the situation is tough, everybody go and look after themselves first.
Okay, I want to end on this question. Just curious, do Burkinabe children learn about Thomas Sankara in the schools? And if they do they get the politics of it, or has it been kind of sanitized into something that's not really all that relevant?
I doubt that they're learning it from the school curriculum. What most of what people learn is outside of the school system. And that's, again, one of the areas that when I'm talking about sovereignty is one of the areas, the education system, what we learn into our education system. People tend to learn more what is happening outside Africa than what is in the African history or those kind of things. And then, because for people like activists or political organizations who have been doing this work to maintain, at least in the consciousness of people, the legacy of Thomas Sankara, people have learned a lot. And the interesting thing is that a lot of the young people who are at the forefront of the struggle to remove Blaise Compaoré in 2015 were claiming to be partisan of Thomas Sankara, even though they were not born at the time he was assassinated. Yeah. Yeah. So it means that at least it's on the level of the consciousness, but now we have to do more work to really make people understand what he stood for, instead of just staying on the name, or but go deeper into understanding what it entails in terms of doing what he was trying to do, so that people can learn lessons from it in future experiences, if it happens in the future, how to organize, how to, what is important, what is in terms of political program, in terms of social project for transformation, what should be at the forefront, who are the forces who can carry those type of changes. There are a lot of things to be learned because, as I say, usually when you have this type of leadership and then you don't have a broad-based popular base to protect them, they can be easily eliminated, and then it's going to be turning back again for 10, 15 years without nothing happening. So it's important to learn lessons from it and then take it from there. But I think that it's been happening across the African continent. There's a rising consciousness of the younger generation. They have some limitation because the political tools and the political education haven't been at that point where they have a deep understanding, but there's the frustration is there, the revolt is there. So it is up to forces like progressive forces to help that new generation grow in the understanding and then work together with them to get them more organized so that they can carry over the struggle in the decades to come.
Okay, well, I think that's a very nice way to end. And I want to thank you not only for joining us on Amandla, which you so faithfully do on a regular basis and help. You're a bit of our compass on a lot of these things, Amet. But also I want to thank you, your role and Grila's role in really keeping Thomas Sankara's legacy alive and working so hard to break impunity. So it's greatly appreciated. And thank you for all of that.
thanks for you guys also who've been consistent in terms of promoting this type of alternative view and thinkings about Africa, and then you have played your role the same way as Grilla has done, and then the merit is shared, I would think.
Okay.
All together. Thank you so much for
okay,
that.
Thanks, Ahmed.
Yeah, man. Une chanson pour le capitaine Thomas Isidore Jean-Noël Sankara. Mais si tu vas au Congo, on te parle de Lumumba. Mais si tu vas en Côte d'Ivoire, on te parle de Nana Boye. Si tu vas down in Ghana, on te parle de Kwame Nkrumah. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'a mis face, on ne parle pas de Sankara. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'a mis country, on ne parle pas de Sankara. Et pourtant, il fait partie du patrimoine de ce pays. Et pourtant, il fait partie des bâtisseurs de Mama Africa. Si tu vas down in South Africa, on te parle de Biko et Mandela. Pourquoi chez moi, Inami Faso, on ne parle pas du capitaine. Pourquoi chez moi, Inami Faso, on ne parle pas de Sankara. Et pourtant, il fait partie des pays de Maman Africa. Et pourtant, il fait partie the freedom fighters pour la cause de Mama Africa. Mama Sankara, la patrie ou la mort, nous vaincrons. Mama Sankara, la patrie ou la mort.
Dépasser même notre production, malheureusement. Par manque d'organisation, nous sommes encore obligés de tendre la main pour demander des aides alimentaires. Ces aides alimentaires qui nous bloquent, qui nous inspirent, qui installent dans nos esprits cette habitude, ces réflexes de mendiant, d'assister. Nous devons mettre de côté ces aides par notre grande production. Il faut réussir à produire plus. Produire plus. Produire plus parce que il est normal que celui qui vous donne à manger vous dicte également.
Sankara actually grew up in what many would say was a relatively privileged family, in that his father was a functionary in the colonial regime. His family actually wanted him to go to a seminary, wanted him to become a priest, but he decided to go to sign up into the military because that was one of the few national-oriented organizations. And when he was in the military, that's when he actually met with a professor who was a civilian teaching in the school and started giving him more like a personal tutorial into history, into the history of imperialism, into the Chinese Revolution, into the colonial history and neocolonialism. So that really elevated his consciousness. And then he had another opportunity to be trained in Madagascar. And over there, he actually also learned about agrarian reform and land reform and agriculture and how to produce crops efficiently. Blaise Compaoré was a very good organizer. And in fact, it was Blaise Compaoré who helped organize and hatch the coup. But he realized that Sankara was tremendously charismatic and just knew a lot more than he did when it came to politics. And that's why Sankara became president and Blaise Compaoré became his number two.
First of all, he changed the name, Upper Volta, to Burkina Faso, meant land of the righteous people, or the upright people, or the incorruptible people.
West Africa, it's very semi-arid because of desertification, rapid desertification, and it was totally dependent on food from France and other countries. And that was one of the things that actually really motivated him.
Il y en a qui demandent, mais où se trouve l'impérialisme? L'impérialisme, regardez dans vos assiettes, quand vous mangez, les grains de riz, de maïs, de mil importés, c'est ça l'impérialisme, n'allez pas plus loin.
And his number one priority, I think, was food independence, food self-sufficiency. If you can't grow your own food, you are totally, not only in a neo-colonial relationship, but you are in fact in a colonial relationship.
Within 3 years, the country became food sufficient. And he went to some of the urban areas that had these ramshackle buildings. And he said, why are you living in these kind of, when you can actually make solid buildings that also look good? And nobody had told people that this is what you should do. They did that. The country built its first rail line that was domestically built with domestic resources without getting a loan for it because everybody rolled up their sleeves, including he himself.
For the first time, Burkinabe, as the people are called, the people of Burkina Faso, plant 10 million trees. Mm-hmm. And people start understanding that they can actually fight and reverse their condition.
Ce qui veut dire que nous devons donner à chaque femme un emploi. Nous devons donner à chaque femme le moyen de gagner honnêtement et dignement sa vie.
He empowered women, for example. He didn't give them just token jobs. He actually gave them real jobs, like officials in the government, ministers in the government, recruited them in the military, had them trained and joined the army as weapons. That had never been seen before. On Women's Day, they said the men should go out and shop today so they understand, you know, how women have been able to keep them alive with the little money that they provide to them.
Quand les filles sont en grossesse ou des choses comme ça, on les renvoie, n'est-ce pas? On les exclut. Mais on cherche même pas à savoir si le partenaire avec lequel elle a eu la grossesse là ne se trouve pas par hasard dans la classe.
The broad umbrella is French imperialism.
France controls most of the former colonies in West Africa by controlling the economies.
The currencies of most of those former French colonies are pegged to the French franc.
France would then invest their funds on their behalf. If things go wrong, too bad.
And obviously, when they saw that Sankara was presenting a threat to this, they made the determination to eliminate him. France also has its actors on the African continent, such as, for example, the president of the Ivory Coast, Félix Houphouët-Boigny, who was actually like a regional representative of French interests. And Houphouët-Boigny had a very close relationship with Blaise Compaoré. Thomas Sankara knew that he was in a very perilous position. Sankara, when he paid a visit to France, one of the questions he was getting from French journalists was that why did he actually dare to pay a visit to the Soviet Union?
Et ailleurs aussi, je n'ai pas seulement été dans ces pays-là parce que nous entretenons d'excellentes relations avec ces pays, avec les dirigeants de ces pays. Nous avons des projets qui nous paraissent extrêmement importants pour notre développement. Nous recherchons des partenaires. Si un pays plus proche peut nous éviter un long déplacement jusqu'à Moscou, nous ne voyons absolument aucun inconvénient.
What became his death warrant was when he attended the 1987 Organization of African Unity meeting in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia.
Qui ici ne souhaite pas que la dette soit purement simplement effacée? Celui qui ne le souhaite pas, il peut sortir, prendre son avion et aller tout de suite à la Banque mondiale payer. Tous nous souhaitons.
He said, listen. We cannot develop our economy so long as we have this huge debt burden above us. We need to do something about this. We need to have these debts canceled. But I can't do it alone. If I do it alone, I will not be here attending the next conference. And lo and behold, it turned out to be true.
Si le Burkina Faso tout seul refuse de payer la dette, je ne serai pas là à la prochaine conférence. Par contre, avec le soutien de tous dont j'ai besoin.
And you can see the African leaders are sort of nodding and agreeing. They knew he was speaking truth to power, but none of them were willing to act on it and join him in taking mass collective action.
That was July 1987. October, he was dead, 1987. And at that time, Houphouët-Boigny was very close to France, was given the dirty job to convince Blaise to get rid of Sankara, because the example that Sankara was setting was spreading in West Africa, was spreading throughout the African continent.
Sankara was shot viciously, I think as many as maybe 12 times, a bullet riddle, with about maybe a dozen of his colleagues. They'd been in a meeting, And he had been warned. He had been warned several times before by his own intelligence services that Compaoré is plotting to get rid of you. The best thing is for you to get rid of him first. That's not his nature. If that's what Compaoré decides to do, then so be it. He has the support of the masses. So he was killed, and the body was buried secretly in an unmarked grave. And then, of course, Compaoré had the press conference saying he found out that Sankara was planning to get rid of him, and that's why people that were loyal to him in the military decided to get rid of Sankara, which was completely utterly false, of course. And then he was in power until 2014. He had four phony elections. And then in 2014, when he wanted to amend the constitution, by that time, there was actually a constitution that had a presidential term limits, I believe, of two terms. And he had served out the second term. When he tried to do that, then he found out that people had reached the limit. And the youth, young people, they stormed the parliamentary building and they burned down the parliament. And that's when the army that was sustaining him realized that they have choice. Are they going to continue maintaining this dictator, or will they side with the masses? Compaoré came out and saying he was going to form a transitional government, and then he would leave at the end of the one-year transition. but people would not have it. They started marching toward his mansion, and that's when he decided to get out of town in a hurry. And the interesting thing is, many of the young folks that came out to the streets and drove Campari away, many were teenagers. They were not born when Sankara was killed, but many of them were wearing Thomas Sankara t-shirts. So obviously his legacy is well alive in Burkina Faso.
Je me retrouve un peu comme un cycliste qui grimpe une pente raide, qui a à gauche, à droite des précipices. Il est obligé de pédaler, de continuer de pédaler, sinon il tombe. Alors pour rester moi-même et pour me sentir moi-même, je suis obligé de continuer dans cette lancée-là.
Vous vous sentez isolé en Afrique?
Mal compris en tout cas.
Mal compris, mal aimé?
Mal aimé, oui.
Outbreak of COVID-19 has affected all our lives in various ways, and it has notably drawn our attention to the intensified systemic racism and selective xenophobia towards our racialized friends in our Canadian society. It is understandable for each of us to feel anxious about this fatal disease. However, the sentiment of fear does not give us the right or the opportunity to conduct hate crime and to discriminate against our Asians, Blacks, Indigenous, and other racialized friends. It is not okay to associate the COVID-19 disease with Asians, particularly those of Chinese descent. It is not okay to conduct physical and psychological abuses towards racialized individuals. It is not okay to vandalize Asians and other marginalized owned businesses. We must stop normalizing and stop accepting racist conducts and hate speeches towards all racialized communities. Rather, in these unprecedented times of global pandemic, together, we must educate ourselves and others and be eager to understand race, systemic racism, and racial justice in Canada and elsewhere. Remember, whoever, wherever, and whenever we are humankind. We must learn to stand together as citizens of the world for a healthier, safer, and happier community.
Wraps it up for us here on Amandla. I want to thank Amit Lowe again for his availability and always his lucid analysis and explanation of things. Always indebted to him and to the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa. Doug, thank you so much for rounding it out with the other pieces that I hope helped our listeners gain a better appreciation of how important Thomas Sankara has been and how important his legacy still is and will be well into the future. So, that's it for us. Please stay tuned now for Jazz Euphorium.
And before we go, I just want to thank once again our wonderful staff at CKUT for keeping the station alive. It's been a slog. It's been particularly hard on them, some of them having to work very long hours. So thank you, staff, for all your effort. And thank you, listeners, for staying faithful to us. So good night.
In Quebec, vaccination against COVID-19 is underway. But not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.